It's great to be with you and see so many friends and people I know from a long way back in this battle for liberty. I've got 50 years in this battle. I started about 17 years old, and I owe my uncle W. Cleon Skousen to that. I read his book, The Naked Communist, still a great read, and it opened my eyes about the fact that our own government, communists within the government, are bringing to power Russia, China, Cuba, Nicaragua. All of those countries fell because of the United States foreign policy bringing them to power. A lot of Americans don't know that we shipped the first, well, we've shipped them the remaining plans that they couldn't steal from the Manhattan Project on the nuclear weapons. And then we shipped them their first enriched uranium. That's why Russia was able to explode a nuclear weapon within a year after we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Pure treason. We brought Mao to power by cutting off aid to Chiang Kai-shek. We brought Castro to power by cutting off aid and military aid to Batista, and also secretly shipping arms to Castro. We did it. The CIA did it. Shipped arms to Castro. We brought the Sandinistas to power by cutting off aid to Anastasio Somoza, president of Nicaragua, the most pro-Western and least tyrannical of any of the Western leaders in Nicaragua. We brought the Shah of Iran to power, and we brought the Ayatollah to power after we told the Shah to get lost. We'd been keeping him at CIA expense in a villa in France all the years that he was waiting to come into Iran. So nothing is as you seem. I'm a great fan of Ben Swan. He didn't last long at Fox News Cincinnati because his line was too much against the establishment. He's out on his own now. And I'm hoping that he can get bigger than Glenn Beck, because even though Glenn Beck, you know, has a lot of good feelings toward the Constitution and is sincere in his desire, he's absolutely in denial about conspiracy. And it's a real sad thing when you let your, you know, he made a mistake early on getting on the wrong side of conspiracy. His ego won't let him go back. And he gets close to it. You know, every time he keeps digging for the truth, just like George Soros kept leading him closer and closer to the globalist conspiracy on Fox News. And that's why they axed him. He was getting too close to conspiracy. And that's what you need to understand about Fox News. Fox News is there to divert you, to keep you in the road on conservatism, mainstream conservatism, but divert you away from anything conspiratorial. Because that's the issue of the day. It isn't Obama. Obama is no longer a Marxist. You know, we have a lot of propaganda. If only we could get rid of Obama, our problems would be solved. It's not true. Obama was trained as a Marxist. He did a lot of Marxist organizing. But at some point, he got bought out by the globalists. And how do you know that? It's because he became wealthy. He was making less than $65,000 a year. Never made over that in his entire life until he became a senator. How come he's worth $14 million today? How does that happen? How does Hillary Clinton have multiple millions in a Swiss bank account? It's because you join the globalist insiders and they make you wealthy. Insider stock trades, special deals. I mean, they control the markets. They can make money up or down on the market. Plunge protection team can make money both ways because they control those markets and they have unlimited access to fiat money. But let me go back and explain to you something that's very crucial. I'm going to give you the background that Ben Swan either doesn't know or can't see. Not because he's not sincere. I think he is very sincere. But nobody can make it big in the media when you require advertising, like Glenn Beck does, unless you stay away from conspiracy, because literally they will blackball your advertisers and you lose. And that's what Glenn Beck would face if he were to tackle the subject. But the one thing that I learned from my uncle's book, The Naked Naked Communist, was that something was really deadly wrong within our government. And this was clear back in the 30s and 40s. When this was becoming very obvious. And there were a lot of communists in government. So the anti-communist movement began. It reached a crescendo during Barry Goldwater's time. Ezra Taft Benson was raised on that during that period. He believed very strongly in the communist threat. Clear up until about 10 years before he died, that was his major focus of the conspiracy was a communist conspiracy. And it was my uncle's as well until he wrote the book, The Naked Capitalist, or read Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, which basically admitted that there was a globalist conspiracy to take away liberty. Not in so many words, but when he talked about we control both political parties, and I've examined their books, and my only objection to them is that they should rave about this. He was a fan of theirs. He wanted them to openly discuss these things and admit to them. But they have not yet done that, and they won't do that because this is a conspiracy of power. And they don't want to awaken a sleeping giant in this country. But as Cleon opened up in his book, The Naked Capitalist, as he talked, which was a review of Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, he talked about the seeming relationship between big corporations and government getting in bed for them, and that he started to get into Anthony Sutton's work, which talked about how Wall Street, in fact, brought Hitler to power, and Wall Street, J.P. Morgan and other associates, and the Warburg brothers, the ones who financed and kept Lenin in some very sophisticated apartments in Europe waiting before 1917 to go back into Russia. So a lot of people, unfortunately, have come to the conclusion in the conservative movement, including the Birch Society, that in fact the Anglo-American establishment, what we call the globalist nowadays, controls the communists, and therefore there's not going to be a world war because they control the communists, and so they're not going to let them attack us. And they get this from the Rowan Gaither quote. It's in Cleon's book, The Naked Capitalist. Rowan Gaither was the head of the Ford Foundation, and he was interviewed about the foundations and why they were supporting communism. And so he gave the investigator, Norman Dodd, of the Reese Committee, he gave him an answer. And everyone in the conservative movement has quoted this answer for many years, and it is that the White House has given us instructions that we want the United States to be peacefully merged with the Soviet Union over time, and that's why we're supporting, you know, and giving aid to communists. We want to bring them in and peacefully merge with Russia and the other communist countries. It's a lie. There's no way that Rowan Gaither would have told Norman Dodd the truth. But he did give them a plausible reason to explain something away, which had some negative connotations. You know, if you're a real conservative, you didn't want to merge with the Soviet Union, but it was to be peaceful. So you see, it could be explained away. And so it diffused the issue, but he was lying. In fact, the globalists don't control Russia. They never have, they never will, even though they play ball with them all of the time. But what are they doing? They're actually trying to influence them through aid and trade. And in addition, they're trying to play stupid and dumb. And the one thing you learn from the Venona transcripts and the other things that have come through since the phony fall of the Soviet Union, and it was a phony fall, the communism just went underground. They're still in charge today. But the one thing you learn from them is that they keep telling us, we can't believe the Americans are so stupid. It's so easy to infiltrate the CIA and the FBI. We had agents in there for 19 years before they were ever discovered. Remember that, what happened in the late 90s when they discovered this agent that had been there for some 19 years? And the FBI said, we knew about him, but we were just watching him. You don't watch somebody for 19 years and let them do damage and not arrest them. It's like Fast and Furious. It's a sting operation. We're letting guns go out the door so that we can track them. 3,000 guns and you haven't tracked one yet? That's not a sting operation. It's just like a drug trade that was going down in Mena, Arkansas. A sheriff moved in from Texas, and this was years after Bill Clinton had corrupted the state of Arkansas with his drug trade with the CIA, and he was living across the street from a sheriff's deputy. And he kept seeing these cars go in the circular driveway and stop. The sheriff's deputy would come out and exchange money and hand somebody a package and go on and keep going. And other cars all night long, there was this complete traffic. So he goes to the police and says, there's drug trade. This guy was a sheriff from Texas who worked in the drug. He knew what a drug thing was going down. And the sheriff told him, no, it's a sting operation. And he says, this is no sting operation. A sting operation, maybe one or two times you let them go, and then you follow them. There's nobody following these cars. This guy's dealing. Come to find out it was the sheriff's crop, and he was dealing through his deputy. That's what kind of corruption is existing, even in local sheriff things in this country. And it started with Bill Clinton in Mena, Arkansas. He was hired by the government to launder the money that was coming in to Arkansas in exchange for drugs and weapons and arms. There was a lot of trafficking going on. It's a complex story. I don't want to get into too much of the cover-ups. We could take all night. In fact, I'm writing a new book, which is going to take probably another year, and a DVD, which is going to be called The Modern History of Conspiratorial Power. It's going to be a comprehensive view from 1900, not the Illuminati, not going back to ancient history, but from 1900 on, the stuff that we know as modern history, and to track exactly how the conspiracy has worked all through those periods. It's going to be done in a way that will be credible enough that you can give it to people who sense that something's wrong, but are very skeptical and afraid of the word conspiracy, because that's the purpose of the media in denigrating that word, is to make sure that you never have the courage to admit that you believe in a conspiracy. And that's why, going back to Fox News, you can tell when somebody's on the other side, even when they claim to be a conservative like Sean Hannity or Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh, because when you utter anything about conspiracy, they come at you like a lion, like a tiger. They have to kill you. They have to denigrate you. They have to slur you. They call you every name. Have you seen Sean Hannity do that? Oh, yes. He's on the other side. You know, Rush Limbaugh used to believe in conspiracy. He used to talk about it openly on his radio show until he got bought out, got his first major million-dollar radio contract. And from that day on, when his regular listeners would start to talk to me, he says, nah, don't talk to me about that junk. That's below. It'd be one thing to say, I used to believe in it, and I have doubts now, and be willing to discuss it, but to all of a sudden turn on somebody with the greatest pejoratives and the negative slurs indicates you've changed sides. And that's the way Satan operates. Ultimately, this is a satanic conspiracy. There's no way that any single individual, no matter how evil, could start in 1900 and set out to cause World War I and bring the Russians to power, to overthrow the Tsar and to overthrow the Chancellor of Germany through World War I, to talk about creating World War II, bringing to Hitler power, overthrowing him, bringing Russia to power to act as a counter. Nobody is that smart. And even if they could conceive of that, they couldn't run with it. Because you only live in an active leadership role some 20 years in life. How do you ensure that plan keeps going? You can't. It has a generational effect. It has been going on seamlessly for centuries. And we've been able to track it historically since 1900 so that we know all of the players. We know exactly what they've done, how they've manipulated things. And there's no way one single human being can do that. Even the mafia can't keep going after one generation or another. They can't, you know, you can't determine what kind of children you have and pass it on maybe one or two generations at the most, but you can't keep it going for centuries. It has to be revelatory. It has to be satanic. He's the mastermind. And it answers the one question that I get so often with people who worry about conspiracy. Why would these wealthy people induce Russia and China to attack the United States with nuclear weapons, because that's what they're planning, and destroy everything they have, destroy their wealth? These are the wealthiest people. They have homes around the country. They have businesses. There's no way in the world that any human being would be insane enough to invite the Russians and Chinese to attack us, unless you're taking orders from somebody else who promises you to do something that you value even more than wine, women, and song, and wealth, and yachts, and cabins in Colorado. And what makes this conspiracy tick is the promise of immunity. The promise of immunity. It's not money. It's not power. Why do I say that? Because they're already the most powerful and the wealthy in the world. And they're already in government. How much more control do you need? But what you don't have is immunity from God's judgment. And you don't have immunity from the laws of the land. And so they promise you immunity on two levels. And the Book of Mormon alludes to this when it talks about the Gadians, the more sophisticated version, the last portion that happened, and they controlled the judges, didn't they? Why? To make sure that their Gadian robbers could get off the hook. Well, guess what? They control judges today. If anybody had any doubts about how high it reaches, you just watch Judge John Roberts, supposedly the conservative icon, turn on his conservatives and vote for Obamacare. How did that happen? It's because they've got dirt on him. They've got dirt on Justice Thomas. It wasn't just Anita Hill. Yeah, he was guilty. There was at least four or five other women that he was involved in. And they've got the goods on him. They've got videotapes. They've got tape recordings. They used the NSA to spy on that. One of the whistleblowers from the NSA said, I had the files in my hand on the dirt they have on Obama. So how do you get Obama to switch from a dedicated Marxist to a globalist puppet? You throw out that dirt. You say, we can crucify you or we can make you wealthy, which it'll be. And you take an amoral person like Obama, and it's an easy choice. Now, let me dissuade you of any couple of things. First of all, he's not Christian, never was Christian, and he's not Muslim. He's atheist. He cares nothing for religion. He despises God, but he's playing a role. And he's playing up to the Muslims just like he plays up to the Christians. And that's what they do when they're puppets. George Bush was a puppet. Here's a guy who was skull and bones. That's a satanic pact with the devil. And yet he claims to be a born-again Christian. Only somebody with the weakest of minds like George Bush could not see any contradiction in those two things. And I don't think he does. You know, he can sit there and bear witness. He came to Utah. Do you remember hearing that up there, George Romney's fabulous little resort? George brought all of the big wealthy people here in Utah, all the heavies from the attorney general to the governor and the lieutenant governor and all the major legislators up there. George Bush came and bore witness to them of Jesus Christ. And they came back telling the Deseret News how wonderful it was, how much we felt the Spirit. And he was just lying to them, and they bought it, hook, line, and sinker. You know, that's probably our greatest weakness as Christians, is that we aren't skeptical enough. We can't see wolves in sheep's clothing, and that's what they are. There was an insider in the White House who said and leaked this, which I know to be true from my context there, that when George Bush would have the annual Friday prayer or the weekly Friday prayer breakfast where he invited all the mainstream and evangelical mainstream ministers, the ones who were playing along with the Republicans, they get invited to the White House, and that helps corrupt them into going along with supporting whoever the White House says you should support. That's why you get Rudolph Giuliani and other cross-dressers like that, you know, being foisted on you, and John McCain. These people are Gadiantans, modern-day Gadiantans. And shame on anyone who claims to have the Spirit of the Lord who can't sense that. You know, that's the great condemnation that comes upon people who think themselves Christian and have gone through all of the ordinances and attend regularly but haven't got enough closeness to the Spirit to sense when they're being deceived. You probably aren't among those, but you may have been at one time in life. And look at what it took to somehow wake you up. That's why Tom asked, you know, when did you wake up and how? What did it take? It's a different path for different people. I diverted myself from what I was talking about. Yes, in the inside of the White House, the Friday prayer breakfast. And the insider leaked the fact that after these ministers would leave, they would sit down and guffaw and laugh and joke about, did you see their faces when I witnessed about Jesus Christ? They believed it. And just laughing and using four-letter words, those blankety-blank this and those blankety-blank that. I mean, it was just, if the American people could see that, they would be literally shocked. And yet, people like Bill Clinton, as immoral as he is, I mean, chronic immorality, sit there and go to church when his press tells him it's time to, you know, make points with the religious right, goes to church and drops the name of God as he walks out of church. We need God's blessings on us. God bless America. There is no greater blasphemy than when people who are Gadians, modern-day Gadians, use the name of God, especially after terrorism that they created and they brought upon us. And like FDR, who brought us Pearl Harbor, not only knew that it was coming, but had a six-point plan to provoke Japan, and then to say it's a day that will live in infamy. It will live in infamy because of the betrayal and the treason. So that's what we're really dealing with. And what I wanted to say to you is that I woke up through that book, The Naked Communist, because I saw with my own eyes there was betrayal going on. And sure, it was only the communist thing, but I found out very, very quickly, as I became very active in politics in my youth and in my college years, as I saw these other things going down, Nicaragua being lost, Cuba being lost, etc., that it was people in the State Department and higher than the State Department who were protecting the communists that were there. In other words, it wasn't the actual communists that were the problem. It was the people when you go out and try to fire the communists, like McCarthy did, and all of these non-communists start defending them and protecting them. Well, the ones protecting ends up being the globalist. I'm of the opinion that Alger Hiss, even though he joined the Communist Party, according to Whitaker Chambers, who was a repentant communist, Elizabeth Bentley also fingered Alger Hiss as a communist, but I'm convinced he was not a communist. I was convinced he was a globalist that went and joined the Communist Party to facilitate getting him to the Roosevelt administration. And why would they do that? It's because they don't have to do the dirty work themselves. They don't have to get in there and betray America directly. They hire the communists and they put him into high position. I'm convinced Harry Hopkins in the Roosevelt and Truman administration was also a globalist, not a communist. Even though he was one of Stalin's favorite boys, he was their go-to boy, Stalin, I'm convinced, thought he was a communist because he secretly was working for them and spying and sending message and doing everything he can. Lend-Lease was Harry Hopkins' job. Lend-Lease was making sure that everything that Stalin wanted got, and it wasn't just military stuff. It was washing machines. It was ironing boards. It was all the consumer stuff that Americans couldn't buy because it was rationed, was going to Stalin. And Harry Hopkins was the go-to man that was sending it all there. Harry Hopkins was the man on the telephone who told Major Jordan, Racy Jordan, who was in charge of shipping all of this Lend-Lease to Russia, and when he found the nuclear plans, when he broke open these diplomatic-only suitcases and found these nuclear weapons plans, he called the White House and told him what he says, and Hopkins told him, close those cases and ship them on. I mean, we would say that was treason, but he was protected. And I think he was the protector of communists as well. The reason I think Alger Hiss was not a communist, he was too urbane, he was very sophisticated, and he was protected by every establishment media person all through his times in jail. They never gave up on trying to salvage the reputation of Alger Hiss. And Alger Hiss was so important to them because he's the one who brought us the United Nations. And that's why I think he was a globalist, because the United Nations is a globalist agenda. They had it in World War I. It failed to give them the League of Nations. And they purposely sabotaged the peace treaty to make it so onerous that it would guarantee that Germany would rebel at the weight of the monetary. In fact, that's what caused Germany to have to inflate their currency, which gave you the Weimar Germany. And who was it that put the bug in their ear? It was Wall Street advisors to the Weimar and said, just inflate your currency. Just pay off the treaty debt in cheap Reichsmarks. And so as they began to inflate the debt, suddenly France started to realize, hey, these Reichsmarks are worthless now, and so we're not going to accept them anymore. We want product, just like what China's doing now. Inflating the dollar, and China says, we're going to buy things with these dollars rather than cash them in. You know, if China dumped their bonds, the U.S. bonds they have, or dumped their currency, the currency would drop precipitously and they'd lose the rest of their value before they had even liquidated 10 or 15% of it. So they're smart. I'm going to buy it while it has value. And they're doing that. buying a lot of stuff in the United States. Well, France did the same thing, started to say, we're going to take all of the coal and all of the gas from the Ruhr industrial district and all the output as payment for the debt instead of your Reichmarks. And so what happened? They started to do that. The German workers went on strike, and they weren't getting paid, and so the German government began to pay for the German workers' wages. And this answers a very important question of why we can't have the same kind of hyperinflation here that we have half a dozen unknowledgeable conservative hype mongers proclaiming we're going to have a currency collapse any day now. You heard it all during 2012, and you're hearing it now in 2013. And I consult with people two or three times a day on strategic relocation. And I ask people when I start my consultation, what is your major concern? And 99% say hyperinflation and destruction of the dollar and loss of reserve currency, and we're going to have an economic collapse and then martial law. And I've only got a few weeks, so you've got to help me now. And I say, relax. It's not going to happen. Let me explain to you why. This is very important. In Germany, the government took over the wages of all the industrial laborers in the Ruhr district because when they were inflating the currency, that allowed those industrial workers to raise their wages. The government would raise their wages to keep up with the inflation. Everybody else started to complain. So eventually the government started to allow businesses to raise their on an automatic basis and reimburse those businesses. That's one of the essential things you need to have hyperinflation. You need to have, first of all, a moderate-sized currency that you can double and triple and quadruple, which they did. And the second thing is you have to have an automatic mechanism for the government to reevaluate people's salaries so that they can rise with the inflation. How do you think they got wheelbarrows full of marks to take to the store? If you didn't have the way to increase your salary, you wouldn't have ever been able to get the wheelbarrows. And prices never would have risen. Do you understand that? If you have 20% inflation and you can't raise your salaries, then you just can't buy. Is that hyperinflation? No, because prices can't keep rising if there's nobody to buy. It's called stagflation. It's what happened in the 70s. It started inflating. There's no automatic injection mechanism to raise your salaries, and so everybody stopped buying. You couldn't afford anything anymore. And the economy started to go down. And that's what would happen if they surged over 10%. You'll notice that the Fed is not doing that. Now, they are, in fact, inflating the currency. M2 last year went up about 20-some percent. But inflation was only how much in the United States? According to the CPI, it was 2 to 3% in 2012. But they're lying again, too. Real inflation was 6 to 9%, and it's been that way for 20 years. Can you adjust to 6 to 9%? You bet you can, because you've been doing it, haven't you? Prices have been going up, but you either tightening the belt or getting a little more money or charging a little more. We have been adjusting for the past 20 years to 6 to 9% inflation. If it went to 20%, we'd all have some problems. And that's why they're not going to do that. And the other reason, that's why you won't have hyperinflation. Because it would lead, we don't have an automatic injection mechanism to raise people's salary. It would lead to immediate stagflation and people and the economy would start bogging down. Just like when gas prices go to $3 or $4, the economy starts to sag, doesn't it? Okay. What about the dollar losing its reserve currency status? We've talked about China and Russia not trading in dollars anymore between themselves. How much a percentage of that is of the dollar trade? Less than 2%. How about the rumors that Iran, or Iraq, that's why we're going to attack it, because they were going to go off the dollar? Would have been a pittance. The point is to remember, the United States alone is 50% of the trade internationally of the dollar. And why is the rest of the 50% of the rest of the world hooked on the dollar? Because we've exported so many dollars for so long. There's over $200 trillion outstanding. And that's only the currency that's been monetized. Now, the Fed says there's only a maximum of $75 trillion. But they're not counting the black currency out there. They're not counting the pallets of $100 bills, pallets, not suitcases, pallets that were going to Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. Now, why would the government be sending pallets of $100 bills to Russia after the, quote, collapse of the Soviet Union? Do you ever wonder why the oligarchs who suddenly became rich were going to Europe and they were passing on $100 bills for tips? That's all they had. They didn't have any 20s. There are no 50s. There are no 10s. There were $100 bills. Where did they get them? The pallets that the Fed was sending to Russia. How about Iraq? Pallets to pay off the opposition fighters. That's how we won the war in Iraq. Not militarily. We paid them off. We bought them with millions and millions of dollars. In fact, there was a major crisis. In Iraq was starting to shut down the dollar exit trade. That means the flights going to Kuwait, people had so many $100 bills in their suitcases they were taking to Kuwait that were causing overloaded planes. They were having a problem. I mean, everybody was trying to buy everyone off so they didn't inspect their suitcases. That's because of dollar inflation. When the Argentina crisis occurred, when was that? What year was that, Graciela? In the 80s? Well, that's right. The most recent one where they shut down the entire banking, people couldn't even use credit cards.
83.
Okay, in 83, almost $500 billion came out of the mattresses of Argentinians. $500 billion just in Argentina. Where did they get all that money? Because when Argentina was beginning their inflation, they were trading Argentine pesos in for dollars and stuffing it under their mattress. And so when the Argentine government cut down the banking system and wouldn't even let them use credit cards, what did they do that for? They wanted to flush the dollars out of the mattresses, and they did so. That's all people could use, and so dollars became the currency. There's an awful lot of money out there in dollars. And do people value them? Do they consider them worthless? They do not. They paid good money for those dollars. And they're holding on to them. They want to preserve that value, and they hold that value. Let me tell you the real reason why this...
Was it the late 90s?
That's right. I thought it was later than that. So, in any case, what happens is, with the international dollar, you have to consider the dollar versus other currencies. A lot of people say, well, the dollar's going to collapse and lose its value. Well, how could that happen? Has anyone gone through the mechanism of how you would collapse the currency? Well, the only way to collapse the currency is through hyperinflation, really. And I've explained to you why it can't happen in the U.S. First of all, with $200 trillion outstanding, the Fed can print and create. They don't print anymore, you know, this money. They actually make journal entries and create it computer-wise. They can create $20 trillion a year and not exceed 10% inflation rate of the existing pool of money that's out there. $20 trillion. And they've been doing some... $2 to $3 trillion a year. So they got a lot of room to still inflate. They've got a lot of room to bail out without it creating, even going above 10% inflation. Now that's how a dollar collapses. Now nobody wants the dollars. Well, tell me, what do you trade those dollars in for? Here's another fact. How big is the euro compared to the dollar? Well, the euro is about 1/10 the quantity of the dollar. Can the euro replace the dollar internationally? Not unless they want to inflate 10 times their currency. What would that do to their economies? Is the pound big enough? The only currency that's big enough is the renminbi of China. Who trusts the Chinese to run the world currency? They have zero transparency. Nobody trusts the Chinese. So you see, you can't. How about, you know, the special drawing rights of the International Monetary Fund? People talk about that turning into you know, they're about 100 to 1 compared to dollars. You'd have to print special drawing rights times 100 in order to start to replace dollars. And what good would that do? You'd have to talk people into trading in their dollars, which they've learned, hey, these have value, and trade them in for special drawing rights. Not going to happen. You see, what you have to understand as well is you can't have a world currency without a world government, because you have to have some way to arrange, to agree on how we're going to divvy up the inflation. You see, everybody wants inflation. Why do governments love inflation? Because it allows them to avoid taxing. They love the inflation. They love deficit spending because, you know, if you got a bill for the Iraq war, every year it was going of $5,000 for every man, woman, and child in your family, would you protest that war? Boy, there'd be an avalanche of marches against Washington if you were getting taxed for it. That's why they don't tax you. If you got a bill for foreign aid, do you think you'd oppose it? You bet you would. That's why they don't tax you for foreign aid. They deficit spend. Just keep throwing it further and further down and give you tax cuts even. Will the piper ever have to be paid? No. They have an out. And it's not economic collapse. That's not their out, because if they pulled the plug, and believe me, they could pull the plug on the economy, it would collapse within about 2 weeks. There are $500 trillion. Now, notice what I said. The money supply, monetized U.S. dollars, is approximately $200 trillion. They're estimated over 500 trillion derivative contracts. None of that has been monetized. Do you know what that means? That means people have made promises to pay the big banks hundreds of billions of dollars that they don't have in their bank. That's a Ponzi scheme. If you did that, you'd be in jail. And every time they try to regulate derivatives and say you've got to have 20% cash in bank to back, that's what insurance law is, you know. Insurance company can be a Ponzi scheme too. You can write policies for $100 trillion. And if you don't have the money to pay out, now they bet on the fact that you don't have to pay out any more than 10% at any one time unless you have a big hurricane or something. And that's what sinks some insurance companies. But the government, because of insurance companies going under, put out laws that they have to have a certain amount of reserves. They have defeated every time the requirement for reserves for derivatives. And why? It's a huge Ponzi scheme. Same thing with hedge funds. And they buy on margin. The margins are the highest level they've ever had in the United States for buying stocks, options, and hedge funds, derivatives, all on margin. So could the Fed pull the plug? Yes, they just stop printing the money, stop bailing out, and stop giving all of these big banks this big freebie, which is you can borrow interest-free from the Fed, and they can park that money in the stock market, in the Forex market, in the derivatives, in the futures market, and make 8 to 15%. That's why they're making big bucks without loaning into. Why should I loan into the real economy and make 6 to 8%? Why? When I can park it with the Fed, get free money from the Fed with zero interest rate, and park it in these, in what I call the speculative economy. So the Fed could pull the plug on the economy and bring us down to our knees immediately, because if those Ponzi schemes collapsed, this economy would come to its knees in a couple of weeks. But they would get the blame, wouldn't they? So why would they do that? They have an out, and the out is what this globalist agenda is all about. There had to be a reason, I surmised, even when I was 17 years old, why would they bring communists to power? Why would they bring communists to power? These are supposed to be the enemy. These are cruel people. Look what Stalin did. 60 million people died. Approximately 80 to 100 million people died under Mao. I mean, these are tremendously evil individuals. Why would these people bring them to power? Is it for money? Can't be for money. The communists don't make them wealthy. They give money to the communists. There's a never-ending stream of welfare going out to communist nations. We have to bail them out. We have to convince them that we're our friends. We have to give them technology. We have to give them weapons. We have to share. We have to disarm to make them feel secure. It's all a bunch of lies. That's not the real reason. They're superficial reasons that they give you. But the real reason is for conflict creation. We'll let them beat down the world, crush Western civilization, and we'll come riding to the rescue. That's what they use them for. And ultimately what they plan on doing, and that's why they continue to build up China and Russia in terms of military weaponry, is that they want them to attack the West with nuclear weapons. And it's a very evil scheme. Only Satan could have thought this up. But here's what it does. And I'll prove to you that it's going to happen. First of all, there has to be a reason, does there not, for building up communist enemies? And we're still doing it. Are we still giving aid to Russia? Yes, we are. In fact, we paid for the dismantling of all of their old uranium plants, all their biological chemical weapons. We paid for the dismantling of their older SS-18 Satan missiles. But we gave all the warheads back to them. And we built a modern, state-of-the-art weapons warhead processing plant. And as soon as it was finished, turned the keys over to them, they locked us out. So our inspectors couldn't go in. And they're refurbishing all of the weapons. Now, they're supposed to grind up that uranium material from the warheads and use it for fuel at nuclear power plants. And they do ship fuel to the West for nuclear power plants to prove that they're in compliance. But actually, our scientists have shown that you can't tell whether it comes from weapons or from new uranium when they're shipping it out. And we know that they're not, in fact, dismantling any of those warheads, but rather refurbishing them. So they're cheating. The United States has known they've been cheating. Do you know that the United States continues to say that the Russia's compliance with the intermediate missile treaty, the one that they signed? We took our Pershing missiles out of Europe, and they were supposed to take their intermediate range missiles out of Europe. Well, we found out after the fall of the Soviet Union and then Bulgaria and Czechoslovakia, et cetera, that they still had their missiles in place. Still had their missiles in place. They've been cheating all this time. And just yesterday in the press, the United States was saying, we insist that Russia, as a signer of the intermediate nuclear missile treaty, abide by this and this provision. Well, Russia 15 years ago said we've stopped abiding by it. And we continue to tell the American people that they're in full compliance. The CIA officially certifies every year that the Russia is in compliance. They've cheated on every treaty there is. Why? Why are you covering for the Russians? In 1997, there was a front page article in the New York Times showing a satellite aerial photo of Yamantau Mountain. This underground bunker city, 30 miles wide, as big as the Washington, D.C. metro area, underground. And they go dutifully to the CIA and say, what's the problem here? I mean, what is this? And they said, oh, we're not worried about it. It's defensive. General Habiger of the American Missile Command admitted, we've never had an inspector into Yamantau Mountain. So how do they know it's defensive? Everything's defensive if you want to cover for a future enemy in their building. You know, we keep disarming our missiles. We keep shooting up Minuteman missiles at Vandenberg Air Force Base to test them to make sure they work, about four or five a year. And we're not building any more. They're using mainline missiles. Take them out of their silos, ship them to Vandenberg and shoot them off. We're down to 450 missiles. And now they're taking the three warheads off and putting one warhead and converting some of them to conventional warheads to use against terrorists. What is the United States doing? They are committing suicide. Then there's PDD 60. 1997, Bill Clinton signed this presidential decision order dictating to our military that they will prepare to not, how is it worded, revise their military strategy to not depend on launch on warning. What that is really telling the military, don't expect to be able to launch on warning, but expect to absorb a nuclear first strike and then retaliate afterwards. General Bushnell said, retaliate with what? After you've absorbed a nuclear first strike. You know what launch on warning does? It means that when our satellites detect Russia launching a missile, we immediately know what silos they came out of. We know what silos are still armed. We can launch ours then, retarget them in the air, and have them hit good targets, and their missiles, which are ballistic, already on the way, hit silos that are empty. So who wins? The second one who launches. That's the one who wins the nuclear war. It's called launch on warning. Now, can our missile forces launch? Do they practice launching? All the time. They think they're going to be able to launch on warning. But I tell you this, they can't launch unless the president gives them the codes. And I can tell you, they're not going to get the codes. They're going to be sitting there watching those missiles coming closer, desperately on the line to the White House. Come on, where's that launch codes? Where's that launch codes? We're having technical difficulties. There won't be any launch codes. And they'll make us absorb a nuclear force. Why do they want to do that? Well, it's very simple. The whole world uses the United States to say, this is the savior of the world. The United States protects the rest of the world, right? Well, it's also the bully of the world now. It's also intervening in the world. And the other part of the world hates us. But the West thinks of America as the protector of the West. If the U.S. military is decapitated in a preemptive nuclear strike by Russia and China, and our leaders come out of their bunkers, and why are they building bunkers? For terrorism? not a half mile underground. Build those bunkers because they know a nuclear war is coming. Why do you think retired CIA, DEA, INS, Justice Department officials, when they retire with their wealthy pensions, they go build retreats in Aspen, Colorado, and others, they build bunkers underneath them? Why? These are wealthy people. They're mainstream people. They know a nuclear war is coming. They know. And how do they know? Because when they were in government, they were never allowed to leak a single thing about Russian nuclear weapon preparation. And to this very day, you can't get anybody in the military to talk openly about the Russian threat. We have an annual report on China, don't we? The Pentagon issues an annual report on the military threat of China, and they always downplay it. And after the report is done, what do they do with China? They offer them more military exercises and military cooperation visits. I mean, what are they doing? You give a report on the military threat of China, which is worse and worse every year. The last one said there are 3,000 miles of hidden tunnels with nuclear missiles in them. And they say at the bottom of the page, we don't expect this ever to be a threat. It's just defensive. The Chinese are trying to feel secure against our overwhelming power. It's not true, and they know it. I'll tell you that the military, the ones who are sincere, are very, very concerned about China. They're very, very concerned, and they are making preparations, but they get thwarted at every stand within the Pentagon. But here's what they're planning. They come out of their bunkers, our military has been decapitated, and then they say, the Russians and Chinese deceived us. We didn't know this was going to happen, which is the big lie. This is the mother of all terrorism. 9/11 was nothing compared to what happens in the United States when we absorb a nuclear first strike. Now, it won't be on cities, per se, except those cities that are integral with the military-industrial complex. I estimate about 12 to 15 cities will get hit with nuclear weapons, and they're dead cities. If you have relatives in Colorado Springs, get them out. Within 10 years, I think we have at least 10 years before this war because Russia and China aren't ready yet. But if you've got relatives there, they should not be living there. If you've got people in the military, they should not be in the military when this war gets close, or they're going to die. Forget about this defending our freedoms. If they're in the military today, they're working for a globalist agenda, whether they know it or not. They're not there defending freedoms, not in Syria, not in Iraq, not in Afghanistan. There's an ulterior motive. So it's time to stop playing the game of supporting our troops. Why didn't they pull out support of our troop in Vietnam? Because they didn't want us to win that war, because that was a legitimate war against communist aggression. But all of a sudden, after Vietnam, when they started to gin up all of these globalist wars, now we bring out the yellow ribbons, support our troops, and we have this massive propaganda campaign. They could have done that too in Vietnam, but they didn't. That wasn't accidental. It wasn't just some spontaneous surge of patriotism. This was a plan in the military, written plan to go ahead and print those labels. And they were handed out free to members of the military. And then everyone else started to get on the bandwagon. This was a plot to make everybody patriotic now that the wars have a globalist agenda. And they tell you it's for democracy. We're in Syria, right, to play democracy. Because we're interested in what, you fund jihadists who are going to create a bloodbath? Is that the kind of democracy that you're trying to do in Syria? It's just an excuse. It sounds nice. It sells well to the media. But it has to do with this major agenda of this globalist nuclear war. In other words, in order to hand Russia and China the excuse to get away with this war, the West has to make themselves out to be the bully of the world. And if you've traveled overseas, if you've traveled to Israel, if you've traveled to any Arab countries, you'll see how much Americans are beloved. They're hated now. They're hated. They don't hate us because of our freedoms. They hate us because of our government. And our government is interfering in all of those governments. What's really going on in Syria is this. Syria has the major retaliatory capacity to hit Israel. So Israel's been planning. Since 2004, the globalists have tasked Israel with striking Iran. Why Iran? Because Iran is the only Muslim-based country other than Pakistan, which is already in control of the United States, Iran is the only Muslim country that is preparing their own indigenous weapon systems. Now, for generations, ever since World War I, the Muslims have been cannon fodder for the New World Order. We supply you weapons, you go charging in the trenches, you die, and we supply you more weapons. Cannon fodder. Started in World War I. The Arabs were never meant to be a threat. So all of the neocons and the Glenn Becks in the world who keep pushing the Muslim threat, the Muslim threat, this is a globalist trick. It's a diversion. The Muslims never will be a threat because they don't build their own weapons. How can you conquer the world if you don't build your own weapons? All you got to do is cut off the weapon supply and they can't conquer anything, right? So the Muslims are not the threat. In fact, the only reason Muslims are a threat in Europe is because the globalists opened the floodgates of immigration and brought them in to create social unrest and hatred and class conflict. That's why they're opening the floodgates to illegal immigration here in the United States. Class conflict, watered down conservative voting. That's why Obama, even though the Border Patrol is still being paid, he issued a stand down order secretly through the INS. They're not to arrest anybody. They're not to deport anybody. Using every excuse to exacerbate illegal immigration to what? To goad you into saying you've got to have amnesty. There's a major evil agenda with this, and it has nothing to do with the fact that, and I speak Spanish, and I love the Latin people, and I know a lot of them are my friends, but it's an evil agenda, and there are a lot of evil Latinos coming across, too, that form gangs that you have in Salt Lake City and that infest Southern California. But the real purpose of the Iranian or the Syrian attack is to take out Syria so that when Israel does a preemptive strike on Iran, because they haven't been able to goad Iran into attacking Israel or the United States troops, and they've tried several times, when Israel attacks them, they will be free from the retaliatory power of Syrian missiles. 10,000 tons of chemical weapons. You have ballistic missiles, over 1,000 of them in Syria. It's a serious threat. They can overwhelm Israel's Iron Dome and Arrow anti-ballistic missiles. They overwhelm it easily. That's why Syria has to go. It's the only reason. It's not about democracy. It's why the U.S. brought in the hired thugs to tell you they don't care what happens to Syria. All they want is to make sure that their globalist agenda of attacking Iran and Syria gets done. And the ultimate goal, there's actually a few goals involved with this. One of those goals, the ultimate one, is to create hatred for America within the Muslim population, because the Muslim population, by and large, is a natural ally of Russia and some of the Muslims of China, but mostly of Russia. They've all long since allied themselves. Most of their weapons for many years came from Russia. And so by alienating the Muslim people against Americans, they facilitate Russia's ability to strike America, saying somebody has to take down the bully of the world. Somebody has to stop this. It's already happening. You see it every day on television. The world saying somebody's got to stop the U.S. from manhandling Syria. And Putin rises up and Putin talks about taking the high ground and defending liberty and other things. And everybody's looking to Putin as the hero. The U.S. is handing that to him on a silver platter, and he's taking it. Now, they made a mistake, though, 3 weeks ago when John Kerry answered a reporter's question about, is there any way for Syria? I mean, everybody knew the U.S. was going to go in there come hell or high water. And a reporter asked John Kerry in London, is there any way that the Syrians can avoid that? Oh, yeah, if they could give up their chemical weapons, but they're never going to do that. That's impossible. And Russia was listening, and Syria was listening. We accept. And they were caught. I've never seen the globalists make such a major mistake. And boy, I'll tell you, Kerry had hell to pay when he got back from that London address because he just derailed the entire Syrian attack. And what could Obama do? He couldn't say, we're going to attack anyway. What? When both Russia and Syria are agreeing to take out the chemical, is that the reason you were going to attack? And all of a sudden, just deflated the entire Syrian balloon. So what does the U.S. do? We can't take no for an answer. Go to the U.N., get in an automatic mechanism, so if there's any violation of this agreement at all, we can go in and attack, and we don't have to get any more permission. And Russia successfully got that out of the way, so that they didn't get that in the U.N. resolution. Now, You've got to learn to recognize when the powers that be will not take no for an answer. And Siri is one of those. They may have been delayed. They may have to put this off for several weeks or even months, but watch it. They'll still take Syria down. Mark my word. They'll never let Obamacare go either. It's one of those, never take no for an answer. They will not take no for an answer on amnesty. You will get amnesty again someday. And it will not stop the problem. They will not close the border. They will not see. They're lying about all of that. We'll continue to have a flood until we are a minority voters. And we may already. You know, Romney actually won the election. They had to bury 8 million votes to keep him from winning. And how do I know that? Because they announced that there were 8 million less voters in this election than there were in 2008. 8 million less. Saying that there was much less enthusiasm for Romney than there was John McCain. How many of you believe that? John McCain was just an afterthought. They tried to foist Rudolph Giuliani on us, and that wouldn't work. And Romney was in second place, and they had to bring John McCain out from 2% approval rate into a front runner by having 6 Democratic newspapers endorse him. And that's how they did it. That's called election manipulation. And they rode John McCain on, and everybody just kind of held their nose because they know John McCain is a womanizer. He's a liar about his MIA experience in Vietnam. He actually collaborated with the enemy. The Soviets had videotapes of his confessions. The CIA paid the Soviets $100,000 to get those videotapes so that John McCain's career could be secured. This guy is the dirt of the earth. And there was less enthusiasm for Mitt Romney than John McCain? No way. There was a lot more enthusiasm in this election. They'd had enough. They wanted Obama out. And they had to bury 8 million votes, not counting all of the dirty tricks that they did in voter registration to get a lot of Democrats elected. That's how they won the election. They really wanted to get rid of Romney for another reason, too. You know, what's very interesting is that Romney... I was not in favor of Romney. I was a Ron Paul fan because I trust Ron Paul. But you see, Romney was bending over backwards to please the establishment. He hired every CFR advisor, just like, you know, he's a big businessman. He says, what do I got to do to win? Well, you got to hire the best and the brightest. Who are the best and the brightest? CFR. Bring them all in. Romney has no ability to see anything about conspiracy in this life. Doesn't want to know either. He even hired Michael Chertoff. That's like the Darth Vader of the other. Michael Chertoff to do all of the management of his campaign team. Talk about the fox in the hen house. Really stupid. But still, they didn't want Romney to win. Why? He's bending over backwards to please them. He's doing everything they want. He took all the neocon positions. They didn't want him. You can't have a moral man inside the White House. He might see something. As stupid as he wants to remain, with full blinder, don't let me see that. He would see things. He would have been there when Benghazi went down. He would not have tolerated the stand-down order that went out of the White House Security Council saying to an admiral and a general, stand those troops down. There was a carrier, a Marine Corps, short deck carrier, 10 miles off of Tripoli when Benghazi was going down. There was 146 special Marines ready, sleeping with their arms for the word to go in and rescue Benghazi, and they were told to stand down. We just got an email from a Marine who was part of that unit confirming it. And those generals and those admirals who were issued, the reason that they were fired after that is they refused to stand down. And within 2 minutes, they had a replacement walking up behind them saying, General, you're relieved. Admiral, you're relieved. And to this day, those admirals and generals have not spoken about who gave them the orders. Even though this was brought before Congress, Congress is told, I was issued a stand-down order, and the congressman never asked him, who issued the order? Can you imagine a congressman sitting in an investigation room hearing there's been a stand-down order that caused the death of an ambassador and not asking, who issued the order to you? You're under oath. That's because they knew, Don't go there. If you knew how many congressmen, even conservative congressmen, they have dirt on that they can control. They let them be conservative, just like they let John Roberts be conservative until they need you. John, we need your vote on Obamacare. Yes, sir. Do it on the tax issue. They gave him the excuse. I mean, this is a rigged system, ladies and gentlemen. But I want to go back to what they really planned for us, because this is the most important thing you can remember. You're going to spend your days coming to meetings like this, and you're going to talk about how do we return our liberty and get the Constitution back. And I'm telling you, the game is already over. The Constitution's already dead. Just like George Bush said, it's just a goddamn piece of paper. It's already dead. They only use it to fool you and various attorneys into thinking when it's convenient. But every time they need to get around it. For example, when you have a terrorist investigator or a terrorist suspect in the Charlotte, South Carolina brig, and you're holding him indefinitely, and you take the case between Judge Marshall Clark and you say, is this constitutional enough to hold him? He's a U.S. citizen. Indefinitely. He says, yes, as long as they don't charge him with a crime, you can hold him indefinitely. The speedy trial provision of the Constitution doesn't take effect until you charge him with a crime. Where does it say that in the Constitution? Speedy trial means a speedy trial. Doesn't mean 2 years later. But as long as you don't charge him with a crime, I mean, they're rewriting the Constitution. It's dead. The NSA, has anyone been sanctioned for blatantly violating the Fourth Amendment? And the NSA had admitted numerous times, now over 1,000 times, that we violated people's domestic privacy rights. Is Clapper in jail? No. It's dead, ladies and gentlemen. You know, even with my experience over all of these 50 years of studying the conspiracy, I can't tell you for sure who's running the show. You know, I have 4 or 5 suspects of people I think are in the top 4 or 5. But you know what I'd need, even if I was president, to prosecute that? I'd need wiretaps. I'd need to have their conversations conspiring to take away liberty. And who runs the wiretapping? The NSA, the dark side of government. Do you think they would tell me? I'd have to go down there and say, let me put the earphones on. Would I have time to do that? No. So it doesn't matter if you have a Ron Paul in there or any good person at all. When the dark side of government controls the courts, 75% of Congress, the executive, the NSA, the CIA, the DEA, the FBI, the DIA, the INI, it's gone. They control all of the levers of power. And what have you got? Appeal to our Congress. When's the last time they did what we wanted? And you'll notice whenever they do elect a conservative, they make sure that the Democrats have a majority in one house or the other, so he can't do anything. The only time that didn't happen, and this tells you how bad it was during the Bush administration, George W. Bush had a majority in both the House and the Senate. He didn't change one thing that Bill Clinton did. Didn't overturn one thing. He fought against it all. And he gave us the war on terror. 9/11 happened on his watch, which was a government operation from beginning to end. Wasn't just letting it happen. They hired the terrorists. They had them training on large 747s. And then, of course, I don't have time to go in all of it, but believe me, there was switching in aircraft. The aircraft that actually hit those things were specially modified aircraft, remote control. I'm part of Pilots for 9/11 Truth. We have the radar tapes that show those aircraft going out over middle America, rendezvousing with another aircraft, both of them doing a 180-degree turn, and one airplane going that way and the switched airplane going in to hit the Pentagon and to hit the World Trade Center. This was something the terrorists never could have done. That bulging modification on the second airplane that hit the South Tower, great big bulging, almost 20 feet wide. A pilot has to do a walk around of that airplane before he accepts it. There's no pilot on this earth that would have accepted that airplane seeing that great big bulging modification. I called Boeing. I said, did you guys authorize that modification? They knew about it. And they said, no, it wasn't ours. I said, look, I'm a military pilot. We couldn't do anything to our airplanes unless the manufacturer signed off of it. So you had to sign off. She didn't deny it. She just said, it wasn't ours, meaning the government did it. So there's some real black operations going within this government, and you cannot trust anything that the government says. But this is what they have planned. They are trying and have been trying for many years to induce Russia and China to do a preemptive nuclear strike on America. Number one process of that is to hand them the excuse of acting like the bully of the world so that somebody has to play the hero and the rest of the world is rooting for Russia and China to cut the U.S. down to size. And only Americans are ignorant about that because they keep getting propagandized by the media that we're the good guys and we're out there for democracy. But that's not how the rest of the world sees it. You travel and ask people. They know. When that strike comes and our military is decapitated, now they have an excuse to tell you we are out of hope. Unless we join forces with all other Western governments and form a militarized global government. You see, that's what they've been wanting all these years, isn't it? Didn't get a world government with the League of Nations, got it with the United Nations, but no power, no taxing power, no military power, right? So it's all voluntary, and the U.S. has run roughshod. And the U.S. led all the communists into it, which was against the U.N. Charter. Why? They want conflict. They want to be stymied. That's why they, you know, it wasn't enough that they would knock Taiwan out of the Security Council after the Vietnam War. That was the secret deal that Kissinger made to end the war at the Paris Peace Conference. Not enough to knock Taiwan out. You're going to give Red China their seat. Another communist country, give them full veto power. Is that stupidity? No, it's conflict creation. I want you to want to make sure the communists can stymie anything that we have so that we, you know, and we've seen it play out all of these years. But that's what they want, a militarized global government to have a new global currency. And the economy comes down at that time. When there's a nuclear strike on America, it's going to be preceded by an EMP strike. And there won't be an EMP strike before that. The reason I'm telling you that is because a lot of people keep getting these hypes on the internet about November 13th, the U.S. is going to do a grid down exercise. Believe me, the grid's not going down on that exercise. Otherwise, they'd get the blame. And they don't want the grid prepared. They've been resisting preparing the grid for EMP, just like they don't want you prepared with nuclear fallout shelters, because they want you vulnerable. They want to be able to railroad you into this sense of save us, you know, do anything. We've been struck with nuclear war. Our military has been decapitated, and they'll have a solution. That's what the Hegelian dialectic is all about. Our solution is we join in a militarized global world government. They'll call it probably the League of Democracies. They'll exclude the communists like they should have done from the very beginning. And they'll march for it, and they're going to win this war. Now, how do you win a war after the U.S. has absorbed a nuclear first strike? Well, in the first place, you bring out all the secret weapons you've been developing that you didn't use to defend America. Space-based weapons they've got up there today that they can stop any additional weapons from coming in. That isn't just Star Wars from the Reagan. That's actually been built. And there's a lot of other secret weapon systems that are built in Area 51 and other special bases that the U.S. has. They won't use it to defend America. But they'll suddenly be able to resurrect those weapons and give them to the New World Order. In addition to that, my theory is that they're going to convince China to betray Russia during the war, just like they had Russia betray Hitler in their pact. And then when Russia is beaten and Russia will be sacrificed, just like Hitler was beaten, Russia replaced it, Cold War enemy. Then China will replace Russia as the Cold War enemy, and now you've got an excuse to what? Keep the world military intact. You know, after World War II, we went back to individual national sovereignty, and they even took away all of the draconian socialist controls over every bit of the economy, gave us back our liberty. Not going to happen after this war. We lose our liberty after World War III because there will be continual, not only terror, but the threat of a nuclear-armed Red China, which is always threatening us, and we'll need a world government. So there'll be world taxation, there'll be world currency, and there's going to be a pact, an oath of allegiance required of every citizen in the world to be able to root out from among you those dissidents, those conspiracy theorists who believe that we were responsible for this war or that we were responsible for 9/11. And that's what you're facing someday. So let me talk in the last remaining few minutes a little bit about what you have to do to prepare for this. This is what I call very sensitive preparations. This is, goes well beyond food storage and water storage. I can tell you as sure as I'm sitting here today, you're going to live through a nuclear war someday. Now, a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to prepare. I'd rather die. So I'm just going to expose myself and I'm going to die. The trouble is you won't die. You may not die. That depends on God. Remember that in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 50% survived without protection. So don't count on dying. It may not happen. But you will be sicker than a dog, and you wish you had prepared. Now, that's your choice. Your choice isn't just dying unless you're sitting at the NSA headquarters. That's the one nuclear target I'm hoping that they hit. They'll do us a great favor by taking that out. But it's not the only one. They've got three or four of those other data centers around the world. But the Russians know about it, and I don't think the Russians are stupid enough not to hit them. But my point is, we do have growing nuclear targets. We have Hill Air Force Base, and we have Tooele. There's an underground base the government has built out in the West Desert somewhere, top secret. That's one of the reasons they gave up Cheyenne Mountain, is because they've got other secret underground bases that they built. That just means more targets here in Utah. Depending on which way the wind blows, you'll either get fallout from Area 51 coming up from the south, or you'll get it from the northwest winds from Hill Air Force Base. So you need to prepare against fallout. Why do I say this? Because we are a minority even among our non-thinking conservative majority here in Utah. We're a minority of people who understand the Constitution, understand secret combinations, and we're willing to take the courage to confront that and openly talk about it. And most people in this state are not, even though they're conservative and good people. But you have to survive. I want you to survive. Because we have the knowledge to rebuild liberty. If there's liberty to build, it's not going to be on a national basis, in my opinion. I think the government will lose control for a couple of years. They won't have the kind of draconian controls they have now or preparing, though they will institute martial law. The point is, it takes hundreds and hundreds and thousands of troops to run martial law, and they don't have that much. And there are a lot of resistance to it. There's 600 million weapons in this country. They're not going to be able to get gun control probably before this war. So those weapons are going to be existing. So what I'm saying is, I think the great benefit of this war is that so many millions of people that are staying in the big cities, in the LA basin and other unsafe areas, are going to be driven out of those cities because of nuclear war. Why stay for a job? I mean, that's when people say, come to me for consultation on strategic relocation, I can't leave. So I give them, you know, advice on how to stay within a metro area or in the periphery so that you can get out, and how to plan an exit route. But when there's no longer a job keeping them in those cities, they're going to go elsewhere. And they're going to flee as fast as they can. It's not going to be nice. If you ever want to see a replay of what happened in World War II, of the Germans taken to the roads to flee the Russians, that's what you're going to see in the United States someday. And the reason why this is such a strategic good location, and why I think the Lord sent the Mormons when they were kicked out of Missouri and Nauvoo to this area, is because it's 700 miles to the LA Basin, it's 1,100 miles to Portland, and it's some 1,000 miles to the San Francisco, through trackless, wasted desert. People are not going to walk it. You're not going to get overrun with millions of people here. Our biggest problem will be Salt Lake City itself. And there's 500 miles between Denver and here, of really difficult terrain. That's why we were sent here. And so you need to prepare to survive the fallout, which may be coming as far away as San Diego or the northwest, if the winds are right, from Seattle. That's another dead city because of the naval presence there in Seattle and the atomic submarines. By the way, you know, Clinton signed a deal with the Russians where he agreed to keep 50% of our ballistic missile submarines in port at any one time. And he actually said this in order to give you confidence that you can destroy us at any time you want. In other words, so that you're assured that we're not a threat to you. We're going to keep 50% of our ballistic missiles vulnerable so that you can strike them anytime you want. How many of you knew about that? See, very few. That should have been screamed from every president that Clinton agrees that we need to be vulnerable to assure the Russians that we're their friends. Well, there's going to be a nuclear strike someday. You need to survive that. And here's how you do it. I've got several books that I have printed over the years. I've done high security architecture for about 40 years, and I've written books for the do-it-yourselfer so that people can, with very little money, can get this thing done. The one book that is probably the best, and I've got some in the back there, which you can have after the meeting is over, but one is called The High Security Shelter Book.
And we'll have the books up here.
Oh, will you? Okay. So the books will come up here afterwards. But the High Security Shelter Book is probably the cheapest alternative. If you have an existing basement, it tells you how to do a concealed shelter with fallout-resistant roof on it, all with do-it-yourself materials. You can do that with about less than $3,000 to $4,000 in materials if you do it yourself. So it isn't that expensive. You don't have an excuse not to be prepared on that. It's got full architectural plans, including the concealment, the battery, and the solar systems, and all the things it takes to outfit one of those. It'll cost more than the $3,000 to $4,000 to outfit it with the equipment, but at least you can get the shelter done for that. Talk to you about the filtration and everything. If you want to add on to your house, I have my bigger book, which is called The Secure Home, 700 pages of everything you need to know about high security construction. This is new construction or remodeling. And it covers literally everything. So there's no excuse. The information's out there. It tells you with architectural details how to build the things if you're so inclined, and you can give it to someone to hire to build. Each one of these shelters that I have designed in my career have concealment with them. I'm a big believer in concealment over confrontation. I think it's very important to understand that when people start pillaging, and they will even pillage here because literally only about 5% of Mormons are prepared with what could even be close to be a year's supply. And that may even be 5% of the active. I think it's 5% of the active. It's a very low percentage. It's about 10 times higher than the rest of the population in the United States, but it's not good enough to keep pillaging and real problems. Now, I think one of the advantages of having a Mormon community is these communities will knit together faster than any other community in the world. Why? Because if government breaks down, and it will, you're not going to get policemen to go to work when their families are starving and they're having to defend their families. So the government's not going to work, but the church will. The church will start to take together and knit together, you know, families. So these communities will knit together faster, but there's still going to be very hard times, and you're going to need concealment. Because if you start sharing your food supply with everybody else, you'll all be starving in 3 days. Now, you don't like to talk about the fact that you have to, but I don't recommend you shoot people who are hungry. The Lord isn't going to authorize you. He's not going to get authorization. You're not going to feel good about that. But you're not going to get authorization to give it all away either. That's not the purpose of your saving the food. If you're going to give it all away, then you don't need my advice. But if you want to survive in your family, and you have a right to survive if you prepared in advance, you have a God-given right to survive, then you need to conceal it. Government will consider it hoarding, and they'll come searching house to house, and they'll take food storage, and they'll come to Mormons. So get concealment. And then have your pantry with some stocks in it so that you can let them take something. Don't hide it all. You know, and you can share some things. And one of the best things to share is rice. Buy tons of rice. You know, it's easy, cheap to store. It's very easy. It doesn't go bad. And you can give people a handful of rice if you want to share. And it doesn't take a wheat grinder to use the rice, you see. But save the high-density proteins and the good things, you know, for your long-term survival. But concealment is very, very important. Each of my books, I talk about how to do concealment. And you know, you can take the principles and you can design lots of things, but you need to think about, you know, how to conceal. You're going to need to conceal weapons someday, too. They will confiscate weapons after this war comes, and so you'll need to confiscate. Not because you need to fight off the entire United States Army. That's not the purpose. You know, as I say, if there's people coming down the road and this is overwhelming force, I'm just getting out of here. And you get down in your concealed space, you let them go by, And then they move on when they pillage what they have, and you come out to live another day. But you will need weapons sometimes when you're confronted with people that are really evil, and there's only one or two of them, and they're not going away, and you're caught outside, and you're going to need to defend yourself. That's important too. Filtration. Now, let me talk a little bit about shelters. There's some shelters on the market that are buryable in the ground. You've seen them, big painted yellow, etc. I'm really not a fan of these shelters. I believe for the money, you actually get more stand-up space straight up and down with basement. And basements in this area, because most houses have basements, are still relatively inexpensive to build. But when you take a tank shelter or made out of a pipe, and you have an exit and you have vents coming in, you've seen maybe pictures of them, they come, put them on a big truck, and they drive into your neighborhood, and everybody sees it, of course, and everybody gathers around, and you get the backhoe in the backyard, and you bury this in the shelter, and everybody knows about it. I can guarantee you that when you get ready to use it, there's going to be a whole crowd right around that entrance, and you have no way to get in or out without confronting all of these people. Even if you did, the vents coming out of the ground, even if you have a little few bushes around them, just act like microwave tubes. You can put your ear down to it, and you can hear every whisper going on in one of those things. So I recommend having shelters under buildings, preferably in your home or next to your home, where you can enter from your own basement from your house so that nobody sees you going in and out. If you're going to do one of these buryable shelters, at least put a building so that the vents come up in the walls of the building and into the attic so that nobody can get to it. And then you have a place to conceal the filtration system, too. Most people won't need full NBC military-grade filters. You can get by with HEPA filters. And there are some by Honeywell Corporation that have a little carbon filter that inserts inside the HEPA filter, and it'll give you almost full NBC protection. And the cheapest gas mask you can buy is a paint-grade respirator right out of Home Depot for $30. Did you realize that? And you can unscrew and replace the filters. But they'll take out paint odors, and that is, and you can even use them in smoke. I keep some of these respirators in my bedroom in case there's a fire. I can just don that, walk right through a smoky room, and it's only $30. So those are some hints about how to do things, you know, cheaply and economically, but you've got to prepare for those things. Now, there's one other thing I want to talk about, and that's concealment. It has to do with concealment as well. You will someday have to hide people, just like the Dutch had to hide the Jews. The Jews of this next war are going to be constitutional conservatives. They're going to be the dissidents that are going to be hunted. And you need places to hide your friends. You need places to go to get out of the way. And it takes time to prepare those things. And that's part of what you can do if you have concealed shelter as well. I realize this may be disturbing to talk to you about these things so directly. We must not be in denial. The Jews were in denial, and they got caught. And most of them went to their death because they got caught in denial. Didn't want to believe it was going to happen to them. Don't be one of those. It's one thing to fight for your liberty, and I'm out there every day with my World Affairs brief, trying to publish the deceptions that are going on and what they're trying to do and watching for war and other things to warn people about. But I'm still preparing for a takedown. In other words, don't be fighting right up to the last minute thinking I'm going to save this country and being positive thinking and not be ready for the takedown. Because I think when you look at everything from the prophecies that have been given through many legitimate ones, there's a lot of false dreams and visions floating around. I'm very much opposed, by the way, to sharing dreams and visions. You just don't know. And believe me, just because they're a dream and you're a sincere person doesn't mean that Satan can't influence them. If you look at the compilation of dreams and visions around, they are all over the map. And although they're all about hard times, and they're all about war and earthquake and other things, which are probably true, it's the specifics that are getting people messed up. Timing, in particular, is really getting people skewed and getting people to be, you know, it's the sky is falling every week. This is one of the problems I see in our movement. There's a lot of government disinformation efforts, talking to Doug Hageman, you know, his DHS insidery claims that talks to him weekly. And I've told, you know, when I was on Alex Jones, I said, this has got to be false, Alex. He says, why so? I said, because the NSA listens to everything. There isn't any way anybody can talk to Doug Hageman and have him come out and publish what the DHS insiders are without them ferreting that guy out. He'd been talking for years. How does that happen? It's either because he's part of them and giving out disinformation, or he's just a dupe. In fact, it happens that this guy who claims to be the DHS is not an insider. He's got DHS people feeding him information. He's not an insider, and they're playing him for the fool, and they know that he'll run and talk to Hageman and Steve Quayle and get people all riled up about this hype, and they've been wrong every single time. Lindsey Williams has been wrong ever since his ARCO chief, you know, who really was an insider, did have some oil information that was correct, and he talked to him, but the two insiders that took over after his death and have been feeding him have been wrong 100% of the time. But he's still out there every week pumping this hype about imminent collapse. Now, why are they doing that? Because they want our movement discredited. They want you discredited with your family members when you're running around telling them we've got to prepare for the imminent economic collapse next week. And then it doesn't happen, and then your family isn't listening to you anymore, are they? So you've got to be wise about this thing. You've got to understand that the powers that be haven't gone to all this trouble to build up Russia and China for a century now and not use them. And the great thing about using them is they get an out. When the nuclear weapons fall on this country and the economy collapses, it's not their fault. They get out of their bunkers and I'm still your leader. It's the bad guys who did this to us. You see how cool that is? I mean, that is really sophisticated. Only Satan's really slick enough to produce that kind of thing, but that's what we're dealing with. So we've got to be smart. Got to be careful about what you tell, what you do, and what you say. So concealment is going to be very important to help the movement out. You've got to help preserve each other. And it won't be enough to even to rely on your fellow citizens here in this state, even though they may be conservative. I think the government will make a very strong case someday that we are the enemy because we're undermining our troops. We're not supporting this war. And I'm not supporting the war. I'll be telling from now until this war that this is a globalist war, that your children ought not to be in the military because they're going to be dead, a lot of them, if they're in these military bases when this happens. And you may be warning them, but I'm here to tell you that I'm warning you. Bruce R. McConkie warned you that there would be a nuclear war, and surely it must come today. And if you'll check your conscience, you'll feel that we will have a war someday, that we cannot trust the Russians or the Chinese. So even though the rest of the world is blind, we must not be blind. We must prepare. Now, I also have one other book that I've written, which is my most popular book, which is Strategic Relocation. Now, most of you don't need that. There are a few copies there if you need it for your friends or other things, but Strategic Relocation does talk about most of the threats that I've talked about here tonight. The other books are how-to books. Strategic Relocation does talk about the full range of threats, and there are some here in Utah. You do need to consider, as well, some form of relocation or retreating if you are living in Utah Valley or Salt Lake Valley. The population densities are too high and the level of unpreparedness is too high to not have considerable social unrest here someday. So if you have the means at some time, either to join forces in families or friends to have a cabin out in the mountains or in safer counties to the south, then I recommend that you do that and it will serve you well. So instead of buying a new boat this year or other things, you know, think about, you know, a retreat cabin or something that allows you. It isn't that, you know, you need both places. You need growing places. I think there's going to be famine after nuclear war the first year, to be sure, and maybe the second year. There will be no food supplies shipped around when the electricity is out. So I think it's very important that you be prepared, that you've got to grow crops. And in addition, you've got to grow crops in a way of which all of your neighbors aren't hunkering around your fence waiting for your crops to get ripe. And you wake up in the morning and even the green tomatoes are gone, you know, because people are starving. Now, think about that. You have to have some rural growing area that's rural enough that you just don't have the population density that's threatening your ability to grow a garden. And that's the kinds of things we have to think. Not everybody has the means. Let me just say it as an ending here. The Lord only expects you to do what you can do. Don't fret because you can't do everything. You get certain blessings for being here tonight because you're awake and the rest of the community is asleep. You have no idea how embarrassed they'll be someday to be known as these were the Latter-day Saints who didn't see secret combinations. They were deceived. And you won't be one of those. They're great blessings. They're also great blessings for doing everything you can to prepare and doing some sacrifice to get that way. Sacrificing some movies and going out to dinner to be able to have the funds. I'm here to tell you've probably got at least 8 to 10 years to still prepare. That's a blessing. The Lord, as evil as this world is, it has to ripen in iniquity even more. We'll see homosexuality probably rise to 50% of the population before the next 10 years is out. It's growing that rapidly. And there's going to be a great deal of evil when you have these anti-discrimination laws where you're not allowed to separate yourself from those or your children. And your children will be propagandized about homosexuality in the public schools. And it's time to get your grandchildren and your children out of public schools. It's time to think about homeschooling. It's time to think about getting out of the establishment medical system. You must not go into Obamacare. It will begin not only to pay and cost a mint for these systems because of all the freebies being around, but they will begin to restrict access to alternative medicines and herbs and nutrition. If you do anything, get on the Weston Price Foundation website and learn about real nutrition. Weston Price is the top-of-the-line nutrition experts in this nation. And you'll learn about what it really takes to be healthy. You'll need it. Forget about stockpiling drugs in times of nuclear war. Stockpile nutritious supplements and food, because that's what you're really going to survive. And when you do get some radiation sickness, it's real nutrition that can flush those out, not drugs that will save you. So you've got 10 years, let's say. And I'm not saying the war is coming in 10 years. It may take 15. The Lord has been gracious enough to keep postponing this for a long time. Remember, there's Matthew 24 that talks about the fact that it has to reach the point where so many people say, I guess the Lord isn't coming. Let's go and eat, drink, and be merry with those. You see what that's saying? It's talking about a lot of people here that will get tired of preparing. And tired of the hype and tired of the threats being just around the corner and then finally give up and say, let's just go drink and be merry. And your children will pick that up even if you don't. If you're not careful about how you school them about these threats and be judicious about believing the things on the internet as they come through. My other last thing that I have to offer is my World Affairs Brief. It's a weekly news analysis service. I am going to try to warn subscribers as best I can when this war is coming. I'm watching it every day. I don't believe Russia and China are anywhere near ready. They need a blue water navy. They're building those things. I don't think they're going to strike until those are ready. So you do have time. It's a blessing in disguise, and I hope that we can all work together. We still need to continue to fight for our liberty, not because I believe we can win as a nation. I want to distinguish that very carefully. I don't believe we can win back liberty as a nation. In fact, if I ever am called upon to say a prayer in church, I thank the Lord for the few remaining freedoms we have. I don't thank them for this free country they live in. Because, you see, the powers that be are going to let you go to church to the very last day. And Mormons will think we're free because we can worship as we please. And all the other liberties are gone. Well, they're not really gone if you don't challenge government. But if you're a challenger of government, they're gone. Detention, snooping, no speedy trial, no jury trial, you know, solitary confinement, they're gone. No habeas corpus. Just because they're not picking on you doesn't mean they're gone. They're gone if you're targeted. And I'm speaking to you because you're going to be targeted someday. There's no way to really avoid. So the way to resist is to know who you can trust. Informal networks. Look around you. How many friends do you have? You can't know everybody and you can't trust everybody, but you can pick 4 or 5 that can be hardcore, trusting people that you can, you'll help me. I can run to you if I need to. You don't have to be meeting regularly. You don't have to do common food storage together. You just know who you can trust and get each of them to prepare as best they can, and not all your eggs in one basket. Don't get a communal retreat. It's better to have separate places. so that you can maneuver like a shell game. That's going to be the game is the of the underground someday. And I'm a believer that the Lord will preserve a remnant of those here and other people who will suddenly be convinced when they finally start to see them. A lot of people will join us. A lot of fundamentalist Christians and other normal Christians will come from around the world and come here because there will be order here. And they will join with us. And so we will be able, I hope, to have pockets of liberty reestablished and be able to reestablish constitutional government in pockets of liberty, especially here in the Intermountain West. That's why the Lord has sent us here, to be a light to the world. And so it is important to learn about the Constitution. It's important to learn even how to tighten down the language of the Constitution so that you can't let the mainstream lawyers interpret it away as they do now. They don't mind if you restore the Constitution. We know how to interpret that. No. You want to interpret it according to the Founding Fathers. Oh, no. You know, we have case law. You have nothing. You know. So learn what we've got to do to nail down tight constitutional government, because we'll need to reestablish it someday here. Well, it's been great to be with you. I hope I've said something that's beneficial to you. I hope I've woken some of you up. It's not that there's no hope. There is hope. I have hope myself. I'm not depressed about this, but I know that there's much to do, and that if we listen to the voice of conscience as it guides us and prompts us to do and follow those things, we'll come out of this together. Thank you very much.
Okay, actually, he's going to take some questions. If you've got a question, a short question, I'm going to let him take care of it. I'll bring his books up here for afterwards.
Okay. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Yes, when those planes switched in midair, what happened to all the pilots and everybody?
That's one thing we just don't know. I don't think they're alive, unfortunately. But the phone calls supposedly from the airplanes were faked. The question was, what happened to the passengers when they switched planes out over mid-America? They had these rendezvous. Now, it's not unusual to see on radar tracks airplanes cross one another and just keep going. But to see two airplanes or several sets of airplanes cross and immediately both of them turn and take each other's place, that is unheard of. And we have the radar records, but it goes off track. We don't know where they went. The FAA will not release that information, which shows they know that there's something going on there. But the so-called recordings from, the various people on the planes were falsified. And that's why they wouldn't let us hear, or even the relatives hear those recordings. Sir?
Do you see Cyprus-style or Poland-style bail-ins coming here soon?
I don't see, his question was, do I see a Cyprus-type bail-in situation where your bank accounts are forced into a bailout and you're forced to take 30% cuts, et cetera. I don't see that. One of the reasons is that the whole world has seen what happened in Cyprus and is really ready to resist that here. And the Fed, by the way, here has a lot more power to bail out without doing those things. It really riled people. It caused a near riot, among Cyprus. And you notice they ended up bailing out everyone $100,000 and less as it was, so that the main people could subside. But I don't see that happening here. As I say, I think they're just going to keeping the economy milking along with 6-9% inflation, and they can do that a lot longer than a lot of people think. Until war comes, and as I say, then they walk away with everything in total control, and they don't get the blame. It's the war. I think that's what's going to happen. Sir?
It's sort of unrelated, but is Fukushima any kind of threat?
His question is Fukushima any kind of a threat? Fukushima is a very real threat, but the actual radiation threat has been hyped tremendously by certain people. The dilution effect has been underestimated tremendously, thousands of miles. The radiation from Chernobyl into Europe, which was much closer than we are to Fukushima, was about 20 rems over 10 years. It takes 300 rems to be a deadly rate, and that ended up being less than a rem a year, and so it really isn't that deadly. because of the dilution effect and the distance here. Now, it is to Japan. It's a very real threat, and it's not over yet. Those reactors can melt down. But the computer simulations showing all of this orange or yellow threat coming all the way to Alaska is just that simulation, and they're not showing the proper dilution of that. It shouldn't be that full bright yellow all the way into Australia. Now, over time, there's going to be some isotopes coming into Pacific, fresh salmon, so you're going to have to be careful. But remember, if you really work proper nutrition, you can handle quite a bit of radiation. The body self-repairs. So it's like in Europe with Chernobyl, the 2% that was affected, and they attribute to deaths that somewhat related to cancers, were from unhealthy people as well. The reason the other 98% weren't affected is because they had good nutrition in Europe. So remember, nutrition is the key. If you're this far distance, the small amount of radiation is not deadly and hasn't been so far. Sir?
November 13 power grid test. What's your take on it?
It is not an active test where they will actually shut down the grid. They are actually... It's a simulation, and they're going to do certain computer simulations. You know, a lot of people on the web, including Alex Jones, has made the statement that, well, drills always precede a false flag attack. But my retort to that is they're never announced drills for a false flag. And this thing has been so widely announced, there's no way that they're going to do a false flag on top of that because they get the blame. The false flag drills are done, like in 9/11, so that it confuses your first responders. Is this a drill or is this not? And it gives them an excuse to stand down people. This is a drill, just stand down. And it causes, gives them a lot of excuse for confusion. So, but I don't see the November 13th as a grid down actual reality. Nevertheless, there's no excuse for anyone here not to have at least a cheap Home Depot generator. Don't wait till a crisis to go stand in line and buy a generator. Everybody should have one, plus a 30-gallon, you know, tank or 30 gallons of gasoline at least. Ma'am?
With Obamacare, there are significant penalties if you don't sign up.
Take the penalties. You take the penalties because it's still cheaper. You know, it's the basic plans and things are still about $600 a month, and the penalty is much, much cheaper. But out of principle, the point is you don't want to get trapped into the establishment medical system because, you know, how many people go to the doctor because it's part of insurance? And you take the drugs because it's paid for. It's killing you. And it's keeping you from learning how to cure yourself with natural medicine. There are cures for almost everything. And you don't even get sick if you follow real good nutrition and lose the weight and really exercise and do those things. I mean, I'm standing here before you, three generations, and we've hardly ever been to a doctor. How do we do that? We live right. We exercise. I'm 67 years old, and I've never been, I hardly ever get sick, even a cold. I'm not saying something can't happen. I do, I'm not dumb. I do keep a reserve of funds. I'm self-insured so that I can pay for an accident happens. But I also listen to conscience. My kids I've taught to listen to conscience. So they don't break arms off of the trampoline. They don't do stupid things. Do you see? Accidents aren't just accidents. Sometimes they're stupid things and you disregard the warnings. So I'm saying stay out of Obamacare, even if you can afford it. Sir?
I'm just curious about like young people, what things you would see would
be
helpful to prepare, like law?
No, law, I was going into law too. My father was a lawyer, Clem was a lawyer. But I began to realize that law was rigged against anybody who believes in the Constitution. If you want to have no work and if you want the judges to sanction you, you just get up there and try to really push the Constitution. They'll let you know in no uncertain terms, you're on your way out, buddy. So even though we need a few lawyers to fight those battles, I still think you need to have productive things, even if you're going to be a professional. I think we got enough time still to be a professional, make a good deal of money to prepare with, but learn a skill or two or three skills. I've learned how to weld. I can do machining. I can fix cars. I can fix washing machines. I'm a professional. How did I take that on? Because I just started doing it. When a washing machine was fixed, I started taking it apart. And I called and I got on the internet and I researched. You just learn by doing. And I'm saying nobody's got an excuse for not doing self-learning. Don't have to take a college course, even though UVU still has some good courses. That's what I'd recommend. Get something productive that'll make you money, but at the same time, you know, work to prepare alternative professions, because it's trading value in fixing things that's going to keep you alive in the last days. After nuclear war, none of you are going to have jobs, even in Utah, at least for the first 6 months or so. So remember, it's bartering your labor. It's helping and fixing. It's stockpiling screws, nuts, bolts, glues, tapes, things that you can't home make. Think about that. Screws, grabbers, worth their weight in gold. Think what you can barter with things like that. Don't get into college debt. I would just assume young people... by the time you pay off that debt, you know, the war is almost here. And I'm just saying it's better to take college slower and to go to night school and other things rather than take on those types of college debt. I wouldn't suggest careers that take 6 years in professional schools to get your license and things. I would prefer that people do more practical things and pick other professions. I mean, it's not like... this is going to be, something you're going to be doing for the next 40 years. You're going to all be in survival mode once this war comes. And your children need to be toughened up. How many of you let your children or your grandchildren, you see your own children, teaching them, and they're weak and they're soft and they whine and they cry? Boy, got to be toughened up. Think of cold showers and cold baths someday. I mean... you'd be lucky to have water. Ma'am in the back.
You mentioned Colorado Springs, L.A., and Seattle, and a couple of places in the military establishments. And you saw that you could be targets. What were the other 10 or 12 that you...
Washington, D.C. New York is a financial center. Norfolk, Virginia. Jacksonville, Florida. Omaha, Nebraska, where the second national command is. And... every major military installation and communications installation will be a target as well. About 3,000 worldwide for the United States. Fortunately, not that many in the West here. You can survive. Just don't be near Hill Air Force Base. You're okay here, even with Lehigh. You figure about a 5-mile maximum radius around any target is your damage zone. So if you're outside 5 miles, you're okay. But you want to be further, just because there's an awful lot of people fleeing and pillaging and other things that happen. Ma'am?
I had heard a few years ago that 80% of the United States population lives within an 8-hour drive of Washington, D.C.
Yes, because most of the population is in the East Coast. 1,000 people per square mile in the New Jersey-New York corridor. There's no way to survive that. I mean, just when they empty out into the streets, it's just... there's just no way to survive that. So I tell people, that's why I rate those states in my book, Strategic Relocation, zeros. Those are must-move states. Even though you can maybe survive, the chances are so remote and the hardships are so great and the risk is so high. So if you have relatives in there, it's a slow process. You've got to alert them to what the dangers are and eventually say, you need to come back out west. Be careful about your kids taking jobs out in the East Coast. It's not going to be good. Sir?
You mentioned about being able to grow food and control it and so on and everything. Have you looked into aquaponics?
Have I looked into aquaponics?
Hydroponics.
Well, aquaponics, too. I have a good friend here who is doing aquaponics. It's a little touch and go. It's not as easy, and it's very sensitive to temperature differences and pHs and all those types of things. Plus, in hydroponics, you have to stockpile artificial, growth medium for hydroponics. As a last resort, underground in a shelter, maybe with grow lights, yes, you might do it. But for most people, it's pretty difficult to make a go of aquaponics. Let me just finish up with food growing techniques. Greenhousing in real soil is my preferred way. I really believe that the nutritional value of hydroponics cannot be duplicated what is in soil if you've got really healthy soil. And so having a greenhouse allows you to enclose it, a little bit of safety, and you can grow, pretty early in the spring to get a head start. He asked a question about converting generators to natural gas or propane or... There are actually, you know, tri-fuel generators that do that automatically.
I have five that aren't.
You have five that aren't. It's pretty difficult and not very cost-effective unless they're very big generators. I prefer, frankly, diesel generators almost exclusively, except for the small portables that I have a couple of just to be able to take to various places and use. But I like diesel generators because diesel fuel can store indefinitely with a biocide in it. It doesn't go bad like gasoline does. And they last a lot longer, and they're much more fuel efficient, and you have more BTUs per pound of fuel with diesel than any other fuel. Remember, if you've got a propane generator, once that propane tank is out, you're not going to go get it refilled. It's a very highly industrialized process. It takes a truck and a pump to do that. If you have a gasoline generator, the way to store gasoline, remember, is to keep it tightly capped. Don't let it evaporate. It's the volatiles which always are gassing off that causes gasoline to really go bad. So you can put a stabilizer in it, but cap it tight. Don't let it vent. You can keep gasoline stored for up to 2 years, and it'll stay good with a stabilizer in it and capped. Now, once it gets past 2 years, I've used even 10-year-old gas. You mix it half and half with fresh, and it runs in most types of vehicles fine. You have to use, you know, sometimes an injector cleaner more occasionally, or an octane booster. But don't throw away any old gas. Mix it with fresh, and it'll keep going. Ma'am?
What about the rumor, or the, anyway, talking about the government taking the 401ks and the IRAs and converting them into U.S. Treasury bonds?
I think that that is a good rumor. It will happen someday. I think it's if there's a major stock market crash, which could happen at any time because the stock market is a big balloon right now, if pension funds, which are heavily involved in hedge funds and stock markets, take a real beating and call for a bailout, it might give government excuse to say, well, let's bring all, as a bailout, as a condition of the bailout, bring them all into, and we'll replace it with treasury bonds. Make you whole, but it's now all treasury bonds. And by the way, 401ks and IRAs are in there too. And that's why I think it's, unless you're very close to retirement, it's probably better to cash out, take the penalty, and put it into preparedness equipment than it is to keep investing in a system that I think is pretty sure that they're going to take into a national system. They have done that in other countries. Sir?
That's good, but what about the push to reverse the amendment, term limits on the president, to give Obama a third term or indefinite presidency? And also, what are the possibilities of an American crystal knock happening, and what circumstances?
Well, first of all, the rumors about a third term for Obama are just that, rumors. There's no serious person. They don't need that. That's only really to gin up interest in the conservatives towards replacing Obama. You know, they're going to give you a Republican, all right. Hillary Clinton's going to run for the Democrats. And I don't think the powers that be want her. You know, she would actually try to be president. They like puppets rather than domineering women who want to try to be president. So I think Hillary won, they'll make her lose, and they'll give us a Republican, a globalist, and it'll probably be Jeb Bush or some of those. But what I'm saying is I don't believe that there's ever any of the third term rumors on that. And the other question was on the...
American Kristallnacht,
which was, of course, the night of the where the Jews were all, you know, their shops were busted, etc. I don't believe it's going to happen in that way because we're not an ethnic minority, but conservative Christians, especially constitutional Christians, are going to be targeted, but more specifically because they believe in conspiracy. That will be the key. And so you want to be careful who you talk to about conspiracy theories. Don't try to convince people who are blind, who have not a clue that anything's wrong, that completely trust the Republican establishment. Only talk to people who sense that something is wrong, that come to you and sense that something's wrong. Ma'am? Well, Clinton's children put out that book. It wasn't complete by Cleon. Others of us in the family did not agree with the printing of that because a lot of it was speculative and a lot of it is wrong. But some of it's right. I mean, I can't tell you which parts, you know, here, but I don't try to figure out when things are going to happen so much. I try to look for the signs of when it's coming close and what has to happen before it happens so that I'm prepared and I can see it coming. Something like a plague, there's no way to see that coming, really. I think you have to be very careful of the fact of one of the reasons why you don't want to be taking vaccines and flu shots, etc. They do put adjuvants into these things which can give you problems and immune system problems. They will compromise your immune system, so don't be taking the flu shots. These things are very dangerous. And, you know, they have spread things like abortificants in special shots they gave women in the Philippines as an experimental technique. You just can't trust what government does, and you can't trust big pharmaceuticals who have immunity. Notice that immunity again. Big pharmaceuticals have immunity about vaccines, and that's because they're not safe. And don't ever give them to children. And that's one of the reasons to stay out of the public schools is because they want you to be vaccinated to get into that. Ma'am, you had a question?
Yes. If there is going to be no hyperinflation and there will be no currency coming up, could you expound a little bit more on what we can do or should be doing to prepare financially to protect
Boy, that's a tough one. She asked, what can we do to prepare financially if there isn't going to be hyperinflation? They're forcing interest rates to zero to prolong the time at which the debt is consumed by the tax revenues that we have. That's why they're suppressing interest rates to zero. And while they're doing that, unfortunately, you can't put your money in the bank and expect to get any return at all. You can't put your money in the stock market because it's a ballooning crisis. It's manipulated. Gold and silver is low right now, and so that's probably a pretty good hedge for inflation. But I don't recommend that people keep a lot of gold and silver into the war years. In other words, when you see war coming, you want to eliminate it because, first of all, people aren't used to bartering in gold and silver, and try getting change for a $5,000 gold coin. You see, you're going to lose a tremendous amount of value. Now, keep some of it if you need to bribe or buy your way out of something. But silver dollars are probably the best barter item there is because it's big, fat, and heavy. It's recognizable, and it's legal tender. You can talk people into taking $20 or $30 for that, but you can't get people to negotiate $5,000 for a gold coin. So I say get rid of most of the – take the inflation hedge from the gold and silver before war comes. But in terms of what to do, I think running your own business getting a good job while inflation is still relatively moderate and making – I think housing is going to be a good investment now. It's going to start back up again. There's going to be a mild inflationary recovery. If you have over $500,000 to invest or $1 million, what I recommend is commercial debt-free real estate, but this type only. Lease to government, medical, or utilities. Those three are going to be able to pay their bills. Now, I'm not talking dentists. I'm talking doctors' offices, clinics, and things. They're going to be part of the medical system. They'll always be able to pay their bills. So if you have – that's one of the few ways, if you have one of those buildings in a non-nuclear target area, so it's going to survive, you're going to get cash every month, even during war times. And there's very few investments. The stock market, people are going to lose everything. Any investment that's in the stocks is going to lose everything once war starts sometime. But debt-free real estate that is bringing income, and not house rentals because people won't be able to pay their bills and small businesses won't be able to pay, but government, medical, and utilities will still. So if you have large amounts of money, that's the place I recommend to put it. Sir? I don't think there will be a massive taking of properties in a war scenario because everybody will be in the same boat. There won't be anything to pay with. I think government will issue a moratorium on that thing. So I still recommend yes, do buy houses. You're going to start to appreciate now, and you will be able to keep them in war if you're, you know, don't get too deep in debt so that you can at least make a payment. Yes, ma'am. Every little bit adds to it. So far, the government has been very reluctant to ever give an inflation rider on anything. They've even denied Social Security their COLA increase, which is cost of living increase. You see, government is very much aware now that if they start giving cost of inflation increases, then it can lead to hyperinflation because everybody's indexed to inflation, and that's what happens. So they've been reluctant to do that. I still see no reason why the government, the Fed shows no inclination to go beyond this current 6-8% inflation. They seem to be managing it right there where it's survivable for the economy, and so I think they'll continue to do it. But you're right, as the more and more people get onto a federal payment system, the potential of turning that into an automatic payment system is there, but I just think our government doesn't want it to lead to hyperinflation. They want, and they only have to carry this out for another 10 years, and then war gives them cover. Okay, a couple more questions, and then we're out of time. Yes, ma'am. Excellent. Yes, it would. Anything in the natural health field or integrating natural health and nutrition to traditional fields, even psychiatry and other things, are very good, but you're going to have to go solo and not be part of the establishment medical system because they will come down on you like a ton of bricks. As you know, I've good friends with Dr. Richard Pulliam, the major endocrinologist and heart surgeon, and boy, the minute he turned against the cholesterol theory, boy, he was out. And they tried to take his license away, and he's finally just, he had to move away and go private. I mean, these people are ruthless about truth. So you're going to have to be very careful to stay private and to work as a private practitioner, you know, get a license. But, you know, licensure is a real trap because they have boards that keep, they want you to take, additional education, which is fine. But, boy, if they get wind of you doing any natural therapy, they'll try to come after you. So we do need more professionals in the natural health field. I want to give one warning, though. Be very, very careful about the inroads of spiritualism into natural health. What I mean by spiritualism is kinesiology, arm testing, and other things where you get yes or no answers out of the body by testing the arm. The Lord does not allow that. You're not allowed to use spiritual things in any systematic yes or no way. It's not allowed. You can pray, but you know how difficult it is to get answers to prayers. That's the way it's intended to be. Nobody's allowed to make a systematic system out of getting answers out of the spirit of the Lord, out of the spirit of the body, by answering questions or even using machines that get them out of the acupuncture points. Almost everybody's doing it. I'm just warning you that there are spiritual consequences for people who get involved, and it has nothing to do with medicine. You sometimes open a channel where Satan starts to talk to your mind and get into your family affairs and poison relationships and things, and that's what happens. I am a witness that it does happen when you get involved in taking the shortcut, trying to get spiritual answers to solve the medical questions. It's not meant to be easy. So don't buy anything that God has given us this system to give us answers. He doesn't allow it systematically. That's just a warning. Sir.
You laid out three scenarios, roughly 2 years of chaos after the war, and also the constitutionalists living underground for some length of time, and then pockets of liberty coming out. How do you see all that playing out as a sequence?
Well, I think what happens is the nuclear war puts the nation into chaos, and a lot of deaths and a lot of starvation going on. It's the Lord's way of driving the good people out from Mammon, I see it, okay? Because they can't survive there. So they're forced to then rely on little rumors and feelings about going here, and they just slowly seek their way. And I think the Lord will draw good people to areas of safety, and that will be stable areas, the ones that stabilize first, and that's going to be rural areas. Now, I see them, you know, the prophecy of Heber C. Kimball, for example, where he saw the Great Salt Lake about filled from wall to wall, and he said he saw this great cataclysm, and Mormons were driven back from all parts of the world for safety here, and he said he saw Mormons taking advantage of their fellow brethren in speculative real estate fever. You could see that happening. So there would be turmoil there as well. And even though people will, I think, come back to areas of safety, and it isn't that Utah will be the only one. I think there'll be some fundamentalist Christians and others will pick in the Midwest and the others. But there'll be relatively low population areas. Then people who have like-minded, who have been exposed to constitutionalism and real true conservatives, will tend to seek each other out. I think there'll be some protection as people come in. You know, the good-hearted people will bring people in. And I just think that somehow we'll find a gathering occurring. I think there'll be leaders. If I'm alive, I'm going to try to do my best to inculcate and try to get order reestablished in a constitutional platform. And I know there are others, really good constitutionalists in this area, that will try to do the same. I will say this, the establishment will rise up and try to oppose us, just like they tried to now, you know, in Utah politics.
Maybe like a couple of years after the
gathering. Yeah, you know, and I don't have a crystal ball of how this. I can only prognosticate that, you know, even electricity could take, it could start coming back in 6 weeks. It could take 6 months. Nobody really knows. We just have to be prepared for the long haul and be prepared to get out of harm's way of these massive population flows. But also remember, we've got to be prepared to sense who are the good people coming in, how to help them, how to build them into a force that we can hopefully get a majority then who hold to the Constitution, where we can have some true majoritarian rights, because you can't really reestablish a constitutional form according to the Founding Fathers unless we get some majoritarian areas. And it may be that we take our like-minded people and we move out to an area where we can have a majority rather than try to convince everybody in the major populous areas to think the way we think.
Now, these pockets of freedoms that you're talking about, the elite would have all these weapons out that they could maybe come after us. You know, how long will you have to stay on the ground?
I don't know that. I just know that we have to be prepared to go with the flow and to get out of the way when we have overwhelming force working against us. And that's why you have to have networks, as I say. So I don't have all the answers, but I'm just trying to give you a vision of what I think is very highly probable and how to prepare for it. Thank you very much. I'm good to be with you.